You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Lindsay Kazuba. Super fun name. Totally reminds me of the word kazoo. Lindsay and I talk about diet culture. We talk about numbers on the scale and how the birth of her daughter and then daughters was a catalyst for her shifting how she thought about food, nutrition, weight, and wellness. You are going to love this. So let's get right into it. Lindsay Kazuba, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am so, so excited to chat with you.
Yay. All right. We start with this. Share with me and the audience what part of the world you call home.
I am New York City, right in downtown Manhattan. Me and my three kids.
I love that. I grew up in New York City. So
did you?
I did. I grew up on the Upper West Side. And when I went back in my 20s with kids, I immediately called my father and was like, how? Did you raise me and my brother in the city? It's a unique experience, but I love it there. All right, very good. Next warm-up question. What is one way that you like to honor or recognize things that are deserving of recognition or celebration?
Yeah, I take a lot of time for self-reflection. It's just kind of built into like my DNA, I think. And so my favorite new activity is lying in the, we live in an apartment building. We have a sauna in our building. So my new favorite thing is laying in the sauna and just thinking about my day, the things that have gone well. It's kind of like my self-reflection moment. And it's amazing. And then anything that's like really worth celebrating, we celebrate with our three kids. Like our anniversary is coming up and we call it our family's birthday. And so I'm getting a cake and we're going to sing happy birthday to our family. So we try to involve the kids as much as possible too.
I love that. Happy birthday to the family. So is it like a hot sauna or is it a UV sauna?
It's a hot sauna.
Oh, am I?
It's a hot sauna.
Hats off to you. I have like a 20-second limit in that sauna.
Oh, I've gotten up to like 20 minutes. I'm like, good. It's the best like toxic release.
No, everybody says that. Everybody says that, which is why like I will definitely try it. I get in. I'm like, okay.
I'd rather sauna than cold plunge, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't do that either. I will swim in cold water, but the idea of an intentional, and I've done for like I am a hobbyist runner my whole life. So after really, really big workouts, I'll do an ice bath, right?
Yeah.
But that
yeah.
like, you know. That has a not an intentional. I don't know. Yes,
it's
love
different.
It for other people. I do.
Different.
If it's your thing, I totally get it. All right, ice baths. Not actually the topic of the day. You're going to share with us the story of how you developed the skill of trusting your own body. I guess that relates to ice baths and saunas. Actually, now that I think about it, we're talking about your physical corporal body. This is something that I actually think is a wonderful topic because I think it's really helpful. And I'm excited to have this conversation. And I've got a lot of questions. I want to start by getting to know the version of you, the younger version of you that did not yet trust your body. So when you think back to a younger version of you, maybe a teenager, what was the relationship that you remember then you had with your body?
Yeah, that's a great question. It definitely started in teenage years. I grew up in Florida. Actually, I was born and raised in Florida, and then I came to New York City after college. So I've
been
here
we're
for
like
a long,
opposites.
Long time. Are you in Florida?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I grew up in New York and then made it to what part of Florida?
Central, like Orlando area.
Okay. All right. Very good. Sorry. I totally interrupted you. Rude host.
No, that's okay. That's amazing. The complete opposite. Yeah. So I grew up there and I just kind of always had this like love and natural curiosity for all things health and wellness. I loved going to the gym. I loved running. Running was like my outlet for stress when I was in high school. It was great. It was amazing. My family ate really healthy. Like I was always conscious and interested in health and wellness. And then as I got kind of older, teenager, college years, that curiosity and that, you know, yearning for knowledge sort of turned into an obsession with staying thin, staying a certain number on the scale, being fit, very like kind of scale obsessed. And that turned into a very obsessive kind of habits around eating. And I was calorie counting. I didn't need to be doing any of these things, but I thought that's what I had to do to stay a certain number on the scale or to be fit and thin. And so I was, okay, we have to be in a calorie deficit. I have to do really hard workouts. I have to do strength training. I have to do cardio. Like, all of the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and all of the kind of subconscious rules that really all of our generations have been taught up to this point. And so I just like consumed those as my own of like, okay, this is what I have to do. And then I had my, and I went through my whole, late teenage years and 20s doing this and kind of would, have moments of time where I would go out a lot and eat a lot and be like, oh, I have to lose weight. And it'd be, let's lose 5 pounds. So it was always kind of there in front of me and it was very exhausting.
Yeah, let's talk a
And
little bit more
so,
about that before we jump into the change, because this is definitely, so I agree with you. It's a messaging that everybody probably has gotten from the beginning of time in different ways. It's tricky because since it is so omnipresent and it's always around, you don't notice what you're picking up as these ideas and these concepts are appearing around you and that you're picking them up as your own. So you come from a family that you say was healthy and active and ate good food. What values and messaging do you remember from your family when you were young? Like, so tell us more about what life was like at home. Did you was there like food cooked in your kitchen? Was there messaging around fast food? Was there messaging around like the value of being thin? Any of those things that came from your family?
So kind of a little bit of all of those things. My grandmother was raised on a farm in the Midwest, and so she was very like she cooked all the time. We had Sunday dinner over at her house. Like she was always cooking. So that was kind of instilled in my mom. So like my
Okay.
mom constantly, we had mostly home cooked meals. All of our breakfasts were like pretty well rounded. There was always a focus on we needed to have our fruits and our vegetables and our proteins, and maybe not said in that way, but it was always a pretty nourishing meals, kind of cooked home style, like Southern style. And so there was always, great food on the table, and there was never kind of this conversation specifically around food that this was like good or bad. We had
Okay.
fast food, but we didn't. It was like a treat. We didn't have it often. We, would go to McDonald's and be excited to get our little Happy Meals with like the little Beanie Baby toys.
Yes.
But that was like a very rare occasion. My mom would like freeze the hamburgers. We would just go get the toys.
That
So,
is the
like, it
whole
was,
thing. That is the whole thing
it's
with the
really the
heavy. It's
toy. As a,
really
like,
the
a
toy.
6-year-old kid, you're like, I just want the toy. I don't care about the French fries. So, it was, that was always there. That said, my mom has always had a weight complex. Like she has
Okay.
always kind of had, I think, what is maybe body dysmorphia. Like she looks in the mirror and sees something totally different than everyone else does. And I mean, I remember her, looking in the mirror when I was young, just being like, "Oh my God, I'm so fat," and like my chin,
Okay.
a little roll that. And she was never overweight. It was just, I'm not fit enough. I have a little extra belly fat, like all of these things. And so, like, and obviously I didn't realize it at the time, but that was definitely like seeping into my subconscious of just like, okay, got it. Like, need to be
Yeah.
thin.
No,
Like,
yeah.
need to be thin to show up in
That's
the
the.
world as I need to be showing up, to be like worthy. And so, what took me many, 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 many years to discover that. And I think there was a lot of other things too, just magazines at the time, like social media wasn't a thing when I was growing up, so like that didn't exist. That's a different topic.
But that's the
But
next
magazines, I
question.
was
Yeah. Do you
very in.
remember? Yeah. Do you remember who you were looking at in media and pop culture, like around, like what is beauty and what is body size? Do you remember who any of your like sort of fan things as a teenager from magazine or stuff like that? What were some of the people who were iconic and emblematic of, who you admired as a kid?
Yeah, I mean I've always been obsessed with fashion, and so I've followed Vogue for a very long time. Kate Moss,
Kate Moss,
which like
okay.
in the 80s and
Yeah.
90s was, not a healthy Kate Moss. And then I loved, like, I was in the era of like pop stars like Britney Spears and
Britney
Christina
Spears. Yeah,
Aguilera,
yeah.
and that
Yep.
was my phase of life. And so them really like that was
Yeah.
kind of the standard of beauty at the time. And then it was just, the people that I had in school and what they were dressing like and what they were eating, what they were talking about. And obviously that kind of shifted more towards weight as we kind of went further in high school, senior year, and then into college, certainly.
Yeah. So you said that you did not actually have a need that you can see now to do the calorie counting and the obsession that you were doing. Are you a person that was engaging in calorie restriction, and do you remember or going on a diet, to use
Oh, yeah.
the lingo? Do you remember like kind of how old you were the first time you were like, all right, the tool that I need to do here is to make myself smaller by controlling my food intake?
I think the diets really started in college.
Okay.
Running was kind of my thing in high school. I was like, okay, let's go for an extra run. Like, I ate too many chips last night. Like, let's run more. But that still was kind of like feeling good for me then. And then, really, like, it was college where I
College.
started experimenting with diets and cleanses and detoxes and intermittent fasting, and I definitely calorie counted. I mean, at one point I was trying to eat like 1,000 calories, which now I'm like, I was literally malnourishing myself. And there was just
Yeah.
all these things. I remember once, and this was even later in my 20s when I lived in New York, I did a juice cleanse for 2 weeks and I messed up my stomach so bad. Like, I had like burned holes in my stomach essentially because of all of the acid, and I was not getting real nutrients. Like, I was juicing just fruit
And
for
that's not to say
weeks.
like there are people, somebody, you do not need to, people who are listening, there are ways to get balanced nutrition through a liquid diet. So people do not need to write in and
Oh,
be like, oh, you
100%.
did
I
it
was not
wrong.
doing it in the right way.
So yeah, right. So that's, and I think that, and also a nod to the people who hear the thing about 1,000 calories, that was in the 80s, and before. That was a very mainstream respected strategy. And so that was the idea, and that's why these things can become, and I'm not educated or in a position to be the expert on this, but that's why these things are so hard to detect, and are the messaging that we're telling ourselves. We use the word subconscious, which really is just to talk about, right? Like, we're not aware of the role that these ideas are playing in our mind. Even if you have a terrible relationship with the adults in your family when you're a kid, that is your example of what it is to be a human being. And so when we see them do things that it's just normal, we don't know anything else. That's what we take into our minds. And I would love to say there's this huge thing. We live in an amazing time about breaking generational impacts and all of these things. I would love to say that people are getting a different message growing up today. I hope they are. Things have shifted. But at the same time, celebrities are still beautiful human beings. People who are put on a public stage generally still have the same style of body, which is not huge, not huge. So I wouldn't say that the messaging is not out there any less, and there's layers of it. The body size discussion very quickly turns into the aging discussion as you age up. It's a really interesting thing to live through. So anyway, those things, to bring everybody all at the same page. I want to say thank you for being honest and talking about those things
Oh, yes,
with
of
me,
course.
because there is definitely somebody out there that's listening that's thinking, no, but that's healthy. Like, I'm supposed to do that, because there's truth in some of these things, right? There's truth in saying that there's nothing actually wrong with wanting to change the size of your body and be healthier. There's nothing actually false about the idea saying that if you put yourself into a calorie deficit, it's going to impact, things. Those things are not on their face wrong or problematic all of the time. And that makes it very confusing.
Yeah. It's a very wellness is, and I mean, this is every single woman that comes to me is overwhelmed with wellness right now.
Yeah.
And because it's exactly like there's research to both sides of everything
100%.
that this is good and this is bad. And if we followed all of the research that we saw, we would literally eat nothing. Like, our plates would be empty. There would not be one thing that we could
Not
put on
one
it.
single thing. Not one single
And
thing.
that's
There are people
just
who
not
rail against,
possible.
right? There are people who rail against bananas, and I'm just like, you know what?
Right.
Introduce me to the man or woman who has like overdone it on bananas, and I'll have this conversation,
Correct. You know, it's one day eggs are good and eggs are bad. And then the next day
Yes.
it's too much protein is good and too much protein is bad. And so it's like
And who can
you
figure out what
can,
kind of salmon we're supposed to be eating? Honestly, I've given up. I
Like,
don't
is it
know.
wild caught? Is it farmed?
I don't know. I don't know. And I'm just like, I'm like, I don't know. Is it wild? Is it frozen? What are we supposed to do here? What's the problem? So I agree with all of that. And I think that I think that it's a reasonable conversation and lends to where we're going through this, jumping forward in time. So you go to college. Did you have that experience in college where you gain weight your first year, or did that not happen to you? Like
That
what
didn't
triggered?
really, not really, like a little, like a few pounds here and there, but like not, I didn't have like the
The freshman
freshman
15 or whatever.
15.
Yeah.
Like I was extremely aware and very, like I would beat myself up if I went out and had too many margaritas and like too many chips and guac. Like I would crush myself at the gym the next day. And that is most definitely not the right way of doing it, but I was extremely aware of gaining weight. And was like, this cannot happen to me.
Okay, so that's the concept of like treating food as something that you have to earn, and exercise is a
Yes,
penalty, right?
a hundred
So,
percent.
do you have a concept, any concept at all, of what were you afraid of? Like, if you had gotten bigger, what was the boogeyman in the closet for like why this had to be avoided?
Yeah, that's a great question. No one's ever asked me that question. I think it was just the fear of like not being worthy. There was
Okay.
such an emphasis on thin as in and like to be thin. And there's still, honestly, like there's still a conversation around that that needs to be
Yes.
had. Is like that never has gone away. It's gotten a little better, but like it's never gone away. Is I think it was just that. It was like, well, I have to be thin or like no one will want me. Like no
Yeah.
one, I won't be good enough for like a boyfriend or my friends or like I won't feel good. And you know, so like it got to that point. I remember one time when I was here, so I was like in my later 20s, I had gained like a few pounds and I was like taking obsessive pictures of my body and I was like, okay, I have to go on this like crazy, I did this crazy workout plan. I like restricted my calories. I like did all of these things. And yeah, it worked, but like I felt horrible. I
That's
was
yeah.
exhausted. I was stressed. Like my now knowing, like my cortisol was definitely through the roof. I didn't feel good, like at all. And so it was just, I mean, it was exhausting. It's, you
Yeah.
know, like I don't know about you, but I don't want to live my life being exhausting and restrictive and
Well,
not having
even that,
fun.
there's that slogan that goes around, and it's still around, which is that nothing, oh, I'm gonna get it wrong, but nothing feels as good as skinny feels. That's not exactly how it is, but there's like that mantra, which is that like if you're skinny, you will feel better, that it's worth the inconvenience and the distress of not that it's worth it. And that can be a really, that can kind of be a scary message. There's a fine line between health and over and compulsive patterns.
Yeah, and I know a lot of really thin, like naturally thin women that are not healthy.
No,
And
right. Well,
like,
that,
you know,
yeah.
so it doesn't equate, it certainly does not equate to being healthy and like what your inside world is looking like. It just doesn't.
Right. No, that's, I mean, I think we all know that from the common sense, like just in our personal universes of the people
Yeah.
we know the person who can eat, whatever they want and just not ever gain any weight, doesn't, and even, oh, I'll take it out of the diet perspective. And like, we know the person who like never brushes their teeth and never has any trouble with the dentist. And then there's another person who has like a 12-step routine 3 times a day and is like constantly dealing with, complications at the dentist. It's like, it's not just as connected sometimes as we wish it was. And so there's that. Okay. So jumping forward in time, you make it through college, you've established these patterns that are working for you, and they don't feel, I'm going to, these are my words, not yours, but at this point, they don't actually feel problematic, I don't think.
Correct.
Okay,
Yeah.
so this is just your life. You're just doing that. You jump forward in time. You're now ready to start a family. I will say from my own personal experience that growing small human beings changes how you feel about your body.
Sure does.
It's a very strange experience from start to finish. But how did you feel about your body during pregnancy?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have three girls actually, and the each experience was extremely different. So with my first, I was very much still. So I had her when I was 32, And so I guess I got pregnant. I was 31.
Yeah.
And that was the first time in my life I was like, I can't control my body. Like, it is, no matter what I do, something new is growing every day.
Yes.
Like, something was weird, something hurts, something is bigger. Like, and that was really hard. Like, that was really, really hard to know that, like, there was nothing really I could do. Like, I
Not
could
a
keep
single
eating
thing.
healthy and I could keep kind of, working out and doing the things that I want her to eventually do. And so I did all the things. I, ate what I wanted to. I was not like overeating. I was not restricting. So it was really the first time in my life, the last 10, 15 years, that I was not restricting food. I was eating what I wanted. I didn't have any weird cravings. So I just kind of ate my meals and my snacks and moved on with my life. And I kept working out. And then I got to, and I was already, before I had her, very nervous about losing the baby weight, because I lose the baby weight. And, something subconscious, talk about subconscious patterns, is I was always relatively small. And so everyone had always told me, you're going to be such a cute, tiny little pregnant person. Like, you're going to be so adorable. You're going to lose the weight so fast. And, like, I mean, my whole life, people have told me that. And especially when I was pregnant. And that was not the case. I
I
gained
was
40
just
pounds and was not tiny. I felt so bloated and like
Yeah.
overwhelmed by my body every day. And I was like, my jaw dropped to the floor, because I was like, this is not what people told me what would happen.
Yeah.
And it was the first time where I was like, okay, this was starting to be the disconnect between what people say and what actually happens. And so I was like, okay, that's not what happened. I did not lose the weight quickly. It took me a whole year to
Which
feel
it just
normal.
does. Like it just
Your
does.
body has just created organs and a
Yes,
human.
and
Like,
the whole
it's
thing.
wild. It's
It takes
wild.
9 months to put on the weight and a year to take it off. But there
Yes,
is,
100%.
it is not imaginary the pressure to lose the weight. Like it is
Oh,
like,
no,
it
yeah.
is like a, I mean, it is in your face. Like there is actual judgment of people in your life, like how fast. You know, what are you doing? How are you doing it? Get back to your clothes.
Yeah, there's
There's a
like a
real
3 month
thing.
grace period until people start being mean. And you're like,
Yeah.
excuse me.
Yeah,
It's just,
yeah.
it's pretty wild, actually. It's pretty wild. But I remember I was sitting on the hospital bed, and I was in the middle of giving birth naturally without an epidural, which was not in the plan. I very much wanted an epidural, and that's just not how it worked out. And I'm looking down, and I'm like, I just pushed this baby out of my body with not 1 ounce of pain medication. And I mean, it took me a while. Like, I'm sort of still in shock over it. It's almost 7 years later. And I was just like, whoa. And it was kind of the first moment where I was like starting to understand. It was the very beginning of the journey of starting to understand that my body was extremely capable of, I didn't do anything. I couldn't control anything. This baby was coming out, and like my body was pushing it. So it was like, it was kind of the very beginning of the story for me, of the journey to
Yeah.
this new direction of like really understanding that your body is so capable of surviving and thriving, to be honest, if you understand what it needs. And, it still took me a little while to get fully to that place, but that was kind of the beginning where I was like, oh, I've definitely been taking my body for granted. Like, kind of not been treating it great.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that come to mind. I mean, first of all, definitely your daughter made a dramatic entrance, and she did not read the birth plan that you had written, to say the
As I
least.
left the hospital, and I was like, I had a birth plan. This
I wrote it down. No, but yeah,
was not it.
and so that leads me to the idea that this was, you had a self-concept that you were in control of this, and your identity seems to have been, connected to the amount of space that your body took up in the world. The physical size of your body was connected to how you were defining yourself and the value that you were able to bring, right, to the world. So that's a complicated play. That's a lot of pressure to put on your
There's a
body.
lot of little things in there, yeah.
Yeah. And then something goes radically against the plan, but it still works out, which is becomes a transformative experience about your mindset, because you were like, this is not the way I thought it was going to go. And you know what? it all worked because this is, because it did. And it doesn't always, it doesn't always work out that way. So let's say that. But you are lucky that that everybody's healthy. Traumatic delivery, surprise, surprise, ouchie, ouchie, but everything worked out okay. Let's talk a little. You talk about that as the beginning of this transformation. Thinking back, okay, so it's an overwhelming experience. It's an over natural challenge, overwhelming experience.
Oof, yeah, sure is.
And but how was it really like in that moment that you were like, wow, I didn't know my body would be able to do this without me bossing it around? Or what? Talk more about like that day and how this little kernel of an idea began to form.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That it was just the kernel at that point. Like it was kind of like, oh, my body could just do this. Like I didn't have to do anything. And then it took some time really to kind of it took honestly a couple months for me to. I remember I was standing on my bathroom scale, the baby's like next to me and her little like bouncer, baby Bjorn. And I'm looking at her and I'm like, that was kind of where I started to realize I had been putting so much pressure on weight and the number on the scale and being really restrictive. And I was very much in that like lose the baby weight mindset. And that was kind of where the kernel started turning into like a bigger seed of there's something here. I don't know what it is yet, but like there's something. I got this like download that I was like, okay, I need to start simplifying everything and not being so restrictive and like starting to like really understand what my body needs. And that was honestly like terrifying because I had never done that. Like I was like, I don't know what this means. Like, how do I do that if I don't put so much pressure on going to the gym? Will I go to the gym? Or will I just skip it all the time? Or like if I don't put so much pressure on limiting my calories and my carbs, like am I just gonna eat pasta every time I go out? Or, so like that was a little scary, but it was kind of like I look at her and I'm like, well, I don't want her to have to unlearn diet culture. Like it's taken me 32 years of my life. Like, so I want her to grow up knowing that she can trust her body and like live in a body in a home that like feels really good to her. And so that was kind of like the start. But then I still went on. And that first pregnancy, I still put so much emphasis on losing the baby weight. Like I tried intermittent fasting. I was like, why is this not coming off? Like I'm breastfeeding, I'm doing all these things. And so it was the idea had been there, but it still was not like fully developed until probably like 9 months in, I was like, okay, I need to start doing things a little differently. I started shifting my workouts. I started shifting the way I ate. I started eating more plants and just like adding more whole foods into my diet. Not that I was eating a ton of processed stuff, but I was like, let's just experiment here. And so it kind of, it was a longer journey. And then it really clicked when I had my second daughter. And that was where it sort of, and that also was COVID times. She was born in 2020. And that's where it was really like, I was like, okay, I need yoga and Pilates. I need to not go to the gym and do strength training and cardio. I need to slow everything way down. I need to eat more plants. I need to eat less meat. Like I had all of these things I was starting to realize. And when I did those, I felt so great. It was my fastest recovery postpartum. I had the most energy. Everything just felt so much better. And it wasn't restrictive and it was just amazing. And that's really where it, like all of the little seeds and kind of the little spurts had just planted themselves.
So let's back up to the community to look at your community and who is around you after your first daughter was born. Because COVID is a time of isolation, so that would be like a little bit different. But did you have like a group of mom friends who were all sort of trying to like get back into their clothes at the same time? Like, were you surrounded by people who were reinforcing the idea directly that it's like this is what we all do now?
Not really. We were kind of one of the early ones to have kids out of our friend group. So it was kind of more like, I want to get back in shape so I can go hang out with my friends
Who are not moms, so it's like
who are not moms yet.
they didn't gain 40 pounds, and so I
Correct.
gotta
Yeah.
okay, I want to
We
be
had
with
like
you.
one or two friends that had babies. And then, like, I did have some people around me that had babies at the same time. And we were just, I don't know, there, it didn't. There was never like a conversation around weight. Felt like it was more like an internal pressure that I was kind of putting on myself. And there wasn't, yeah, there was never really like, I don't know. There wasn't like direct conversations about it.
All right, very cool, very good. All right, so this kernel begins to grow, and you shared with us some of the things that you were doing. You were changing the intentional foods you were eating. You shifted the type of workout you were doing, but those are all as a result of this mindset shift. Which let's talk about where what kind of shifts you made. It sounds like you say that you made a shift that you were in a curiosity phase. You were experimenting with what worked. And then sort of its intuition and trusting your body. Were you aware of this at this time that you were listening to what felt good to you, or talk more about what was the shift you were making?
Yeah, the shift kind of, there was definitely no like, oh, I'm gonna be intuitive and like just
Okay.
listen to my body. It just kind of was like a natural thing that had from the where I had gone from to where I was. I was like, I feel like I need something, but it's not like what these people are telling me. And so it was kind of more like, okay, let's just feel what I need. And I've always been pretty trial and error. And I don't know if you're into human design, but like that's some of my profile lines is I'm very trial and error. So like I've always naturally gravitated towards trying a bunch of things and seeing what sticks and feels good. And so that's kind of what I was doing. It was like an experimental phase where I was like, okay, I've always done cardio and like run for my cardio. I've always done strength training. I've done like, you know, Barry's classes and spinning, even though I never really liked spinning. I hated it. The leaderboard, like, no, thank you. And but I always did it because I was like, that's what I thought I had to do. And then this kind of phase of life, I was like, you know what? I've been hearing about this Pilates thing. Like, let me try this. And so I didn't even go to a class. I did go to classes, but I did a lot of it just on my mat at home.
Yeah.
And I scaled back from working out 45 minutes to an hour at the gym to like 15, 20 minutes on my mat. And once I was doing that really consistently, it like changed the way that I felt completely. It started allowing me to feel my body more. It started allowing me to slow down, which helped my cortisol levels, my stress.
Yeah.
It really allowed me to start saying, oh, like slowing down actually feels really good for me right now in this phase of life. Like, let's keep going. And I still, to this day, that's what I do for my workout. I've started adding back in strength training in a couple days, but Pilates yoga is like my jam. That's my sweet spot. I started meditating every day because I was like, I think I need to like get all of these other thoughts out and like listen to myself. That was honestly like the game changer because I think now, and this is something I talk about all the time now, is we need quiet to hear what our body is saying. And we are in a very noisy world. And like
Yeah.
just, you know, the whole conversation we've had already is like all of the information and the noise. And then you factor in social media on top of that. It's a lot. And so if we don't create a space around ourselves, we can't hear like what we need. And so
Yeah.
that even, you know, to this day is like a daily practice for me. It's like a non-negotiable, but it was then in that phase of life in 2020 where I was like, this is really important for me to do so that I can hear myself and so that I can focus on what I actually need. So it was kind of like, what do I need right now? But without being like body intuitive and like putting the words
Yeah.
to it, it was, you know, the concept without the words.
So when you tell the story of standing on the scale with an infant in a bouncy seat next to you, but then realizing that you were going to be her example of behavior and messaging, talk a little bit more about that, like realization that she was going to learn from you. And then you had two more girls that they were going to learn from you by watching how you move through the world. Like how did that feel to make that awareness and connection?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty spectacular to do. And now that they're older and I've kind of seen them like a more experienced parent, they do what you do, not what you say you're gonna do. And
That
so
is
it's
the all that
really
is the
like,
like that is like a colloquialism of parenting. It's like your kids are going to do what you do,
you can
not
tell
what
them
you
what to do
tell
all
them.
day long, they're not gonna do it.
Right.
But it was really kind of, and so I very, very early on, like when she was an infant, I realized, okay, her inner dialogue is going to be how I speak to myself. And so, and I don't know where that came from. I just kind of had this like thought one day and I was like, oh, like this, it's really important for me to like never talk about my weight or like pinch my belly fat or look at myself and be like, oh my God, I need to lose weight. I have never once looked at myself in the mirror and been like, oh, this is not good enough. Like, And so, I do my morning workout every single morning. My Pilates or my yoga, I still do it to this day. I do it right after I get out of bed, and all three kids are usually climbing on me. And I'm like, it is one of the most important things to me for them to see me doing these things that is taking care of me, not
Yeah.
just taking care of them, or not like beating myself down. And we constantly talk about how it's important to have confidence and feel really good in your body and listen to what your belly needs. I say, listen to what your belly needs. Like, do you need that extra cupcake or are you full?
You might. And listen,
Sometimes you might.
you might. Cupcakes are delicious, especially at birthday parties.
It's true. It's true. It's funny. My six, almost 7-year-old, she's pretty tapped in. Like, she will eat a cupcake and she'll stop. She's like, the icing's too much. I'm like, okay, stop. My 4-year-old's like, can I have another one?
Yeah, no, like, it's there you go. All right, so all of this is fantastically interesting. All right, the one last question before we begin to wrap this up. In 2025, I don't think any conversation about body size or weight loss or changing how we see our body can be complete without like talking about the impact of the new medicines that are out, the GLP-1s, the transformative medications. Like historically, any kind of like medical intervention has just been a super polarizing and controversial topic in the health world and the wellness space, and this is no different. It's just people have all different kind of opinions. What personal opinions or thoughts do you have, just generally speaking, about these medicines, the GLP-1s, and the impact they have on people?
Great question. Great question. I actually just wrote an article about this. It's in my opinion, they work. They work
Yeah.
if you need them medically. And if you are taking them in a form to just lose weight, then it's just another diet. That's it. That's like the simplest way to boil it down, I think, is injections like GLP-1, there's a million different brands. Are another form of a diet. They work and you will lose weight while you're taking them. But the moment that you get off them, if you haven't changed your habits, what do you think is going to happen? All that weight's going to come right back because you haven't changed anything.
Yeah.
It only changes your inner world for a short period of time. And if you get off of it, it's like any other diet. You will gain the weight back, you'll be frustrated again. And then we start to feel like it's our fault instead of the approach that we're taking. And so I think it's so much more important to look at it in like a holistic view is one, do you actually need to lose weight or is it this like pinch a tiny roll of belly fat, like kind of constantly want to lose weight? Because I know a lot of people that are just like always want to lose 10 pounds no matter what they weigh. And so is it that? And I think, really understanding, I was just having this conversation with a friend. She was like, every single person I talk to, left and right, is on some form of
I
an
know. Everybody's
injection.
taking it. Everybody's taking it.
Everyone, and even the people that say they're not taking it, a lot of them are taking it. And
Well, that's
so,
the most controversial thing this week is like if you like admit like people who admit that they take it totally flamed. And I'm like, that's so weird to flame people for taking it because I don't even know if I know anybody who's not taking it. It's like it's like you go
I
to
know,
dinner
like,
these
just admit
you go to
it.
dinner these days and people are like, I'm going to have, one lima bean for dinner. And it's like, what?
Right,
Oh,
right.
right.
So, and
Okay, you have no
thinking
appetite
about
yet.
it in that way is like, yes, it limits your hunger cues, right? But then you're malnourishing yourself. It's just another diet if you're doing it for just weight loss and in a way that you don't medically need weight loss. And for the people that are diabetic or obese that truly need it, it's great. But at the same time, you need to adjust your actual habits and how you're thinking about food, your relationship with food, because if you don't adjust that, then when the moment you come up, then you're going to be on Ozempic injections for the rest of your life.
Right,
Are we really
which
doing that?
I mean, and the thing is, like, for me, this is just my opinion. Like, that is the decision that people need to make because, like you're saying, like it's like medicine, like anything else. And there's nothing wrong with taking. There's nothing value based in my mind about taking a medication for the rest of your life. Like, so, like people take heart rate, high blood pressure medication for their whole life. If you're diabetic, you are going to be taking diabetic medication for the rest of your life. So, like. But that's the decision, right? Like, what are you doing? Are you doing this as a short-term intervention? Are you doing this as a long, is it a lifelong change? I think that that is the decision. And where that weighs in for me, and these drugs I think are going to change, which I'm not a doctor or a pharmacist. So in 12 months, what we'll be talking about, something totally different, I'm sure. But currently they're very expensive. And so
Yes.
that's one of the conversations. Like, it's like, if you are going to take this for the rest of your life, that's a financial impact. Again, neither good nor bad. Like, people pay for gym memberships and car payments and prescriptions and all of those things. But it's just really, really, really. But the thing that is so funny about this is that I mean, nobody can say at this point, like, that they don't work. I don't think that, although I guess there is research shows, there is a small percentage of people that it does not work for at
Well,
all, which is,
there can be a lot of side effects. Like
Oh, and
there's
the
a
side
lot of
effects, that's
side
the other thing. The
effects.
side effects are so
So like, are we
established.
dealing this with this for the rest of your life? Honestly, it's a quick fix. And I think if you're doing it at the same time as adjusting your habits and understanding why you're emotionally eating or understanding why you want these foods, or if you're not getting enough food or why you don't want to work out, or like understanding more about the habits that you're building, I think that's where they can work together. They can work together if you adjust your habits at the same time, because if you don't and you're just doing it for a quick fix, like it's just going to come back. And everyone knows when you get off a diet, you usually gain more weight because your body's like, help, like we've been starving this whole time. Now it's time to eat. And so it just kind of works in the opposite direction that you want it to if you're not doing it in the right way.
One of the things that I found so interesting these last couple of years while people are taking them is how this is this weird thing where mass culture and this group of people reporting who are going in and taking all of these medicines are impacting like really research. So the whole idea that does it removes the called food noise for people who have been thinking about it. It sounds like you had a chatter track in your mind that was like, this is the right way for me to be fit. This is the right way for me to be thin. Food noise is this idea that people who are there's constantly thinking about food, and these drugs make that go away. And what has been interesting for me as an outsider is that the medical industry complex had like been like just denying that for like the last 100 years, and then all of a sudden there's this medicine that comes out and it makes it disappear, and now we're acknowledging, it's like, oh my gosh, that is a thing. Maybe we should help these people and meet them where they actually are. And it's been interesting as an outsider to watch, because it really has transformed the discussion in so many ways about the actual challenges that people have in doing this, and making it stick in another way.
I know. I think it's an interesting conversation, but I think at the end of the day, it's a band-aid, and if you're not fixing the I don't know, scratch underneath, then it just is gonna kind of grow and get worse. And it's just, I think that really starts with trying to understand what you need. And in order to do that, we have to kind of create this like pocket of silence around ourselves so that we can hear, because a lot of time our body just speaks to us in whispers. And like, I have this conversation constantly with my clients, is the idea of like constantly thinking about food, constantly overwhelmed with calories, constantly needing to, I have a lot of clients that are in menopause or like postmenopause, and they're like, I cannot lose this extra 10 pounds that I gained during menopause. Like, what do I do? And it's funny working with women that are postmenopause. They're very stuck in doing things a certain way. And when you can shift it, I have this client I've been working with for a couple of months. And at first she was like, Lindsay, I have no clue what my body needs. I have no clue what habits give me energy and which do not. I have no idea. And I was like, okay, I got a process for this. Like, come along with me. Let's do it. And the first month she was so frustrated. She was like, it's not working. It's not working. I'm like, girlfriend, it's been 30 days. Like, we are unwinding years of conditioning here, and it's been 30 days. I promise, just stick with it. So we ditched the scale. I was like, no more scale. It's just stressing you out. You're doing it too much. Every single day is not, we don't need to do that. And yesterday she gave me an update, and she was like, I'm starting, it's been 2 months now. And she was like, I'm starting to feel a shift. I know what foods and what beverages I'm consuming that like give me energy and which ones don't, and which ones give me bloating and gas. And I'm like, incredible. Because when we can start like understanding little things like that, we can start to say, oh, well, having this grilled chicken and broccoli for lunch is not making me gassy. But if I have this hamburger and French fries, I feel really gassy and I'm exhausted. So I can't go to my 3 p.m. meeting because I feel like I need a nap or another coffee. And it's like, when you start shifting those things, your whole world kind of opens up and it starts shifting the inner narrative and you start seeing more. You have more awareness over the things that you're doing. And I think that conversation needs, and honestly, I think that's the biggest problem with the wellness industry right now is there's this always this conversation of I can sell you something that's going to fix your problem right now. But the problem is we're not actually teaching people how to create a system that works for them because it's not one size fits all. And
No,
if we don't know how
exactly.
to adapt it to ourselves and our lifestyle, like it's not going to work.
No, I think that there's, and even when we know that, food becomes a very complex thing, and that lends to why it becomes more and more important that you're driving your own ship and making your own decisions, because food is very connected to how we designate community and how we show love and how we all of those things. And at the end of the day, we have to eat. It's a requirement for staying alive. So that makes it a complex discussion. All right. So that's very cool. Okay. So let's bring this all together. In a minute, we're going to do the final fun questions, and that'll be super fun. Tell people, you've talked a little bit about how you're supporting people, but tell people directly what it is that you do. Just throw out like a website or how you want people to connect with you after they hear and watch this episode. And then I've got an offer from you for the audience. So let's do that.
Amazing. Yes, I would love to connect more with your audience. I'm Lindsay Kazuba, integrative nutrition health coach. I just say health coach because that's kind of a mouthful. And I work with women both one-on-one. I have private clients, but I also have a group program. It's a course and community called Health Club Collective. And in there, we really focus on helping you unlock your healthiest weight yet and trusting your body far beyond the scale because it's kind of both. It can't be one or the other. It's really, they need to go hand in hand for it to be long-term and sustainable and really realistic. And so that's how we help people in there. It's a year-long group program and it's incredible. It's so fun. And lindsaykazubahealth.com is my website. And I hang out on Instagram a lot. It's at lindsaykazubahealth.
That's a you ha your last name is distinct and unique, and so that gives you an advantage in
A little
locking
hard to
down
pronounce,
all,
but
but for locking down the like unique properties, it's like super good. All right, so you have a special offer for the audience, which is the Health Club Collective. It's $100 off the price, which is normally $997. So in all the show notes, wherever you're listening or watching this episode, you'll find a link and a checkout code to redeem that and more information about Lindsay. I always say this in every episode, the easiest way to get these links, you guys, is to be a subscriber to the Art of Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I zap them right into your email box and you can just click on the link and take advantage of all the offers, Lindsay's and others. Lindsay, thank you so much for that generous offer. It is really, really nice. Are you ready for the final three questions? Rapid fire, just for fun.
let's do it. I love rapid fire.
Yay! All right. How do you feel about roller coasters? Love them, hate them, or used to love them as a kid, but not interested today, or something else?
Love them, but there's certain ones. I can't do the spinny
Oh,
ones. They're not the same on my stomach anymore.
yeah. That is
Like
a
the
funky
tilt-a-whirl
thing.
ones. I'm like, no, thank you.
I had a profound moment on the spill. You are from the Orlando area. The teacups with young
The
children.
teacups, those will knock me out for the
Sitting, like sitting there
day.
thinking, wow, this used to be so much fun, and I literally think I might die.
Yeah, not no longer fun.
Super funny. All right. Today, you are a guest on my show. Share with us another podcast or some other streaming show on TV or wherever you want that you enjoy and you recommend for others.
Ooh, I'm very into human design these days, so I really love the Align podcast with Jenna Zoe.
All right. Very cool. So last week, and we're recording this in the beginning of September. Last week, there was a massive Powerball lottery. I don't know if you were aware of this or
Oh,
not. The
yeah.
jackpot prize was an enormous $1.8 billion. It was a fun conversation to be having. If you won just even $1 billion, what is the first thing that you would buy? The only rule is it has to be for you, it has to be for yourself.
Oh, amazing. That's really funny because my husband and I had this conversation.
I think everybody had it. I think, what
Everyone
would,
had it. You're like, we have to be prepared.
exactly.
Honestly, he was like, I'd put $1 million into Lindsay Kazuba Health. And I was like, yeah, I think I would too. I would hire a marketing expert to help me run Lindsay Kazuba Health because honestly, I'm so passionate about helping women find their healthiest weight because It just everything in your world feels better when you feel good in your body. And it's so important for our kids and our family and everyone around us can like feel the impact of you taking care of yourself and prioritizing yourself. And I think it's so important for not only ourselves, but like also our kids and, future generations.
All
That's how I'd put it
right.
into my business.
You'd invest in your business, and that is a fantastic answer. All right, that is it. Lindsay Kazuba, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest
Thank
today on the show.
you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.